Prepare yourself to be disappointed. Alter your state of mind to adapt to the fact that you'll never have happiness in any capacity. That's Origami Angel, who will join us later in the show. I'm Blake Murphy, and this is Jay's Talk Plus. There has been what's felt like a specter of gloom hanging over Blue Jays fans in the early part of the season. Yesterday, that appeared to get denser, get heavier. It's hardening. It is settling. It no longer really feels like a specter. It is a weight now after the Jays lose once again on Tuesday, a very non-competitive 10-1 drubbing at the hands of, yes, a fun-loving Phillies team that is the best team in baseball so far, but is also a team that is so rich right now on vibes and on talent and on momentum that they're down their star shortstop who's on the IL. They rest their star catcher because there's an afternoon game coming up after a night game. They rest their hottest hitter because, he had his hitting streak snapped and he's dealing with a bit of a hip thing. So they're down three of their key pieces and they still don't even blink at the unserious threat that the Toronto Blue Jays presented to them. 10-1 final score. The Jays have now lost 10 of their last 13. They're 16-20. The underlying metrics are even less friendly. They have based on their run differential of minus 46, they have a record we would expect to be actually 13-23. So somehow things could have been even worse. So far, it's ugly, and a lot of things went ugly yesterday. Lefties getting to Jose Berríos, Tim Mayza continuing to struggle out of the bullpen, although at that point the game was in hand. On the offensive side, we told you all about Christopher Sanchez on this show, talked to you about it on Blue Jays Central. The Toronto Blue Jays did not get the memo. 13 ground ball outs, a couple of ground into double plays. They did get a couple of runners in scoring position over the first couple innings, stranded them all by going 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position on the day, just uncompetitive at bats, rolling over sinkers in spots we know Sanchez is gonna throw them, changeups outside of the zone when you're ahead in the count. It was a rough one, an RBI ground out from Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, representing the only offense for the Blue Jays in this one. It's bleak, so bleak, in fact, that I would bet that our next guest wrote her piece that went up this morning before yesterday's game, because there were small room for optimism in that piece that I'm not feeling this morning quite as much. Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic joins us now. Caitlin, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Been better from a content and team perspective, but overall pretty good. So I guess let's just start here. Where are you big picture feeling right now after yet another really bad loss for the Blue Jays yesterday? And yes, one against a good team, but one that saw all the things we've been talking about so far this season really, really highlighted, to the extent that John Schneider got himself kicked out of that one out of frustration. It feels bad right now, Caitlin.
No, it does. And I think that what you laid out too is that it could be a lot worse. Maybe that's like a reason for optimism, but they could be 13 or just have 13 wins, as you said. So that would be, definitely a lot worse. But I think that it's tough because really the front office came into this season just kind of doubling down on the team that they had built. They obviously pursued Shohei Ohtani in the offseason. That would have been a huge get, would have been a franchise altering move. They didn't get him. And so then ultimately they decided to kind of just run with the team they've already built, more or less. Obviously they make some small complementary moves, adding, Justin Turner, who's been really good, IKF, who's been, everything you kind of expected him to be, but certainly not guys that were necessarily going to dramatically change the complexion of the team. So really from that, you just thought the Blue Jays were going to hope to improve internally. That was their big bet. They thought that they could way outperform the offense from last year. They thought the offense from last year was kind of an outlier, not really accurate of their true talent. And, along with that, they probably bet on the starting pitching being very similar to what it was last year, when it was really one of the best in the league, both bullpen and starting pitching. And so far we've seen, the starting pitching being ultimately really just so-so, or maybe even a little bit below that. And then the bullpen has been the worst in baseball, which is something that I don't think we expected. And then you pair that with the fact that the offense, hasn't been any better, if not slightly worse, honestly, if you look at guys like Bobichet, who have not had it going at all, and he was really good last year. I mean, if you look at, like, I think I looked at their record last year at the 36-game mark, they had 21 wins already. So they're pretty far off the mark compared to where they were last year. So you could say they're arguably a lot worse, even though it's kind of the same team.
Yeah, and there aren't a lot of things you can point to that are going well right now. And some of that, look, so let's be honest, some of this is going to regress. Some of it will get better over the course of the season. But right now, they are 30th in bullpen ERA. They are 20th in starters ERA. They are 26th in runs per game. Those are kind of the big three things you can do. You have starting pitching, you can have relief pitching, and you can have hitting. And they are not checking the boxes on any of those. So I mentioned, we saw John Schneider get ejected yesterday. That frustration level for him, whether talking to us as media or in-game, seems to have been coming up. You know, Jose Berríos sounded frustrated after the game. What is the key for this team right now? And this falls on John Schneider, fair or otherwise. I know that, look, there is a sentiment of the fan base that puts this on John Schneider. George Springer's leading off again today, for example. But to use the Charles Barkley perspective that Gregor Chisholm wrote about today, you know, the players are not playing well enough and management put that team together. However, it's John Schneider's job right now to try to hold everything together, to make sure that he can keep everyone kind of holding onto the rope. What does that come down to this next little bit? Because you've been around this team a ton the last couple of years, and the personality of the team, the group is mostly the same. What do you think this team needs to be most conscious of to make sure that this doesn't go further off the rails?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say because it feels like the team came into the season kind of feeling a lot of pressure. I think that they knew they weren't sort of looked upon as a necessary guaranteed contender. I think that, you know, on the one hand, maybe that helps the team. It's like, okay, maybe they come into the season as an underdog and they kind of fly under the radar. But, you know, they've just kind of been an underdog in the sense that they haven't been very good, but they're not really surprising people. You know, it does seem like they need a series where they just get the bats going a little bit. It's been a while since they've had any sort of blowout win. You know, the one time that they've scored a lot of runs recently, they lost that game because they allowed more runs. You know, that goes hand in hand with their really, I think it's the second worst run differential in the American League. It's, I think the only team worse is probably the White Sox. So, you know, I think that they just need to kind of release some pressure somehow. And maybe that is just, you know, getting a good start, having the bats go a little bit, you know, maybe some luck, maybe some balls drop. In terms of what Schneider can do, I mean, you know, he's in a tough position, as you say. It's, you know, that he can only kind of control what he can control. You know, he has the players that he has. The players aren't playing up to their, you know, career levels, and he can change the lineup. We've seen him do that a little bit. I think it's kind of curious why he hasn't moved George Springer. I mean, I understand that you're talking about a guy that is one of the best leadoff hitters in Major League Baseball, you know, ever. He has been a great guy to lead off for most of his career. But, you know, this year it's just not been a good start for him. And, you know, it'd be one thing if this was the first time that we were seeing George moved, but we saw this happen last year, I think around maybe July or so last year, when George was struggling and Whit Merrifield was hitting really, really well. And those guys kind of swapped in the lineup, and Schneider moved George down and had Whit as a leadoff guy for, you know, a number of weeks, I think at least a month or so, until George got it going a little bit. And, you know, I think that would ease some pressure from a guy like Springer. I know he's a veteran. I know he's been around the league a lot of time, but, you know, he feels it too. I think he feels the pressure to perform for this club. And so that's one that I find kind of curious. I haven't been around the team lately, so I haven't been able to ask that. But, you know, we've seen, I think Varsho's moved up, Bo's moved down. Like, we've seen some tweaks to the lineup. I just think it's kind of curious why not try someone else in the leadoff spot, whether it's Justin Turner, Davis Schneider, even Varsho, you know, someone different up there just to release some pressure from George that he might be feeling.
Yeah, it was July 28th to August 27th last year where Springer came out of that leadoff spot and hit fourth and fifth primarily, a couple games in there at second. Who knows? The thing with the batting order is always too, like, it's not going to, like, George Springer is not suddenly going to be able to catch up to 96, better because he's hitting fifth and first. But at a certain point, get a fresher look, change things up. There are 20 players in baseball who have led off for 100, have hit out of the leadoff spot for 100 plate appearances or more this year. And Springer's 19th in on-base plus slugging. So it probably warrants mixing it up. Bo Bichette, by the way, is down to sixth in the lineup today. It's a 105 start. We'll go through the lineups for you a little bit later in the show. So, Caitlin, you had a very helpful piece go up this morning that was, you know, more emotionally charged than I normally get after yesterday's loss. Read this piece this morning. Okay, there are some causes for optimism and certainly some causes for pessimism, but let's bring the emotion down and let's check in with things. That is up at The Athletic right now. It's called, very straightforward, 5 Reasons for Optimism and Pessimism with the Blue Jays right now. What do you, on the optimism side, he's in the lineup again today. He's hitting 7th. The fact that Davis Schneider has basically become an everyday player, he's in the lineup every day, 0-for-3 yesterday, but had a good walk. Fun day, actually, with him being a lifelong Phillies fan and having so many friends and family at the game. But how high does that rank for you in terms of, hey, things we can feel okay about so far this year?
No, I think so. I mean, obviously, he's hitting the ball really well. I think his on base is top 3 on the team. You know, he's been barreling the ball up really well, kind of knowing the pitches that he can do damage on. And that's something that he obviously did in his breakout year last year, did very early on when he came up with the Blue Jays. Obviously, he had that slump in the second month, but it looks like he's really kind of found his way. You know, he looks like a legit major league player. I don't know if he's necessarily always going to be an everyday guy, but certainly he's played himself into an everyday role right now. And, you know, I think that it's a good thing. I think that obviously fans get on, you know, John Schneider a lot, but I think back to earlier in the year, I think it was the second series in Houston, and, you know, the team was obviously struggling offensively a lot, and Schneider was one of the few guys that was swinging the bat well. He obviously won them one of those games with a game-winning home run, and then he wasn't in the lineup the next day, and there was a lot of outrage, and there was a lot of people that were upset by that move, and John Schneider at the time said, you know, like, you know, right now we're just kind of going with what we think our lineup should be. But if somebody starts to play really well, like, we're going to play them. We're putting the best team out there. And so I think that it's good to see him kind of back up those words and see that, yes, if someone is swinging the bat really well, including Davis Schneider, he's going to get in the lineup every day. And I think he'll be in the lineup mostly every day until he's not swinging the bat as well anymore. And also you kind of counter that with the fact that, you know, Kevin Kiermaier had been injured. He's been off to a really slow start. So I think you have more opportunities with Schneider to get in there, obviously, with the fact that he can play left field.
A few other positives in that piece from you, including Dalton Varsho, who will hit in the 2-hole today. He is hitting, you know, he's slugging better against four-seam fastballs than anyone in baseball. You know, hey, we'll see against Aaron Nola today, whose velocity is way down on that fastball. And it's been okay, but there are some warning signs underneath. That'll be an interesting one to see. You had mentioned Justin Turner. On the rotation side, you would have certainly said Jose Berríos was a positive, given the way his March and April went. He won American League Pitcher of the Month. But as you pointed out in that piece, and as we saw yesterday, there was a little bit of a suggestion that regression was coming. Some of the under-the-hood stats on Jose Berríos were maybe not concerning, but certainly said he wasn't pitching as well as his ERA would have suggested. What have you seen from Berríos so far? What stood out to you about his struggle last night?
Yeah, I think it's obviously the hard hit balls and the damage. I think that when you looked at his ERA on the surface, it was the best in baseball going into yesterday's game. It was sub 2. But then you looked at the expected ERA, which was a lot higher. It was closer to 5, I think. And so some of the numbers, like you say, didn't look so good. The amount of hard hit balls that he was giving up was, you know, one of the highest in the majors. He's not striking out as many guys as he was, you know, even last year, just over his career. And so I think that we've seen him in games like not have his best stuff, but be able to sort of maneuver a lineup. I think it also helps that he has a great defense behind him. And so that's why you can sort of look at the expected stats and recognize that, well, maybe Blue Jays starters are going to kind of be able to overperform some of their underlying stats a little bit just because of the great defense behind them. You know, a lot of those hard hit balls hit to the outfield are caught because of the Blue Jays outfielders in their defense. Whereas on another team, they might drop for hits. So I think that it's fair to say some of the Blue Jays pitchers, and I think we saw that even last year. I mean, they had one of the best rotations in baseball, but they also countered that with one of the best defenses in baseball. So those two things kind of go hand in hand. And obviously the Blue Jays have put an emphasis on pitching and defense over the last couple of years, maybe to a degree that's hurt their offense a little bit, but that's probably a different discussion. But anyway, I think that we're probably going to see some regression for Brios. Maybe we already saw a glimpse of that last night. I still think he's going to have a really great season. He's still a really great pitcher, and there's a lot of things to like about his season. But I think the fact that he had a sub 2 ERA, it's over 2 now, probably see it creep up a little bit. But, you know, I think he's still a guy that can make the adjustments, and we've seen him do that before. And so I'm not worried about him. It's just I don't think that it was going as well as maybe some of the numbers said.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's not early in the season anymore at the team level. But, yeah, one bad outing and your ERA can almost literally double. It went from 144 to 285. In just one bad start yesterday. So when we look at where this Jays team is, I mentioned they're 16-20. Their underlying numbers suggest a team that should have performed even worse than that. Maybe they've been outscored by 46 runs, which we know is generally a more helpful predictor of what's to come than just the record itself. They have faced a tough schedule, one of the toughest in baseball, certainly one of the toughest pitching schedules in all of baseball. But these games count, and they have ratcheted things down to where the Jays are already 7.5 back in the division. They're already 4.5 back of the wild card, 2.5 back of even fourth place in the East. And there is a lot of time to catch up. But if we look at things like playoff odds, Ben Nicholson-Smith tweeted out today, other than the Astros and I think the Cardinals, nobody has seen their odds of making the playoffs drop more significantly over these first 35, 40 games than the Blue Jays. FanGraphs has them down at about a quarter of a chance to make it. Again, lots of time left, lots of things can change. But when you hear that, when you see that this is not just like four games under 500, but there is a, you know, these metrics or these models have lost confidence in the Blue Jays being as good a team as maybe we thought, and other teams that they would be competing with, other than maybe the Rays, haven't dealt with this same issue early on. How are you feeling about where the urgency level is, where the margin for error is the next little while? Because I feel like, you know, even at 18-18, we might have felt like, okay, it's not that far off. But it has felt like some of these losses are, you know, they're all one out of 162. But some of them have felt a little weightier than maybe I'd normally feel in May.
Yeah, and I think the thing with their playoff odds is, you know, I was looking at this yesterday as well as I was writing the piece, and I think their playoff odds are probably in the bottom five of all of the American League. And even a team like Houston that has a worse record has been arguably the most disappointing team in baseball right now, and, you know, more disappointing than the Blue Jays, they still have better playoff odds than the Blue Jays right now. I think that's a product of their division, right? Like the American League West isn't seen as competitive as the American League East. So even though the Astros have fewer wins than the Blue Jays, based on their schedule, based on the fact that they play in a less competitive division, in theory, or the models kind of suggest that, then they probably still have a better shot at making the postseason than the Blue Jays do, whether it's via a wild card or via, you know, climbing up to the top of their division, maybe catching the Rangers or the Mariners. Whereas, you know, the Blue Jays, they play in the American League East, and that's a division where you see the Yankees and the Orioles jump out to, you know, a pretty significant lead. They look really good. They look like they're going to be two teams that are going to be contesting for the division all season long. They're probably, you know, plus 90, 95 win teams. And so the Blue Jays, you know, basically best route to the postseason is the wild card. But you already look at where they are in the wild card, they'd have to leapfrog like 6 or 7 teams at this point. And that's just to get into one of the bottom wild card spots. That's not even talking about the top wild card spots. So yes, it's still very early in the year when you consider how long a 162 season is. I mean, it's 6 months long. I think we're not even at the quarter mark yet of the season. So there's a lot of games left, but it is a substantial hill the Blue Jays would have to climb. And what's making it worse is the fact that they just are in a very, very tough division where, you know, it's very hard to win their division, especially when teams like the Orioles and the Yankees get off to the start that they do. And then you're looking at the wild card, which is very competitive. There's a lot of teams that are better this year. Detroit's better this year. The Royals are better this year. Guardians look better this year. You know, the Central is probably going to be, you know, the easiest division, or, you know, the least wins, but it still looks like that division has improved too. It doesn't look like, you know, the Tigers or the Royals are sort of like the walkover teams that they used to be. And so that's, you know, that's making it tough too. I think the Blue Jays have spoiled some opportunity. They've had a hard schedule, but they also haven't taken advantage of teams like the Nationals, the Royals, who in theory they should be better than.
Yeah, and look, you've got another one against the Phillies. The Twins are the hottest team in baseball, other than Philadelphia, maybe. They're here on the weekend. You get Baltimore and Tampa Bay, and I think Tampa Bay could be 0-159, and Blue Jays fans would still worry about what a series against the Rays look like. May 20th can't come soon enough. They have a 13-game stretch where they play White Sox, Tigers, White Sox, Pirates. But that might be it. That might be the only kind of breathing room you get on the season, and that is two long weeks away. Like you said, baseball is a very long season. Feels even longer when things are going as they are right now. Caitlin, great work. Defining reasons for optimism and pessimism in Blue Jays season up at The Athletic. Also thought your piece on Alek Manoah's start on Sunday was really good. Thanks for taking the time out, and keep up the great work.
Of course. Thanks, you.
Caitlin McGrath of The Athletic. Again, finding reasons for optimism and pessimism in the Blue Jays season is up at The Athletic. I don't know that you need a lot of help finding the reasons for pessimism, but it was helpful to go through some of the things that have gone well or could potentially turn in the right direction. Not that I think those things are going to make anyone feel better right now, because the Jays are going through it. 10 losses in their last 13 games. They'll try to correct that today at 105. It's Chris Bassett against Aaron Nola. We will, of course, have coverage for you. Danjo and Hazel on the TV side. Jamie and Shy on Blue Jay Central. Ben and Chris on the radio call. Arden's down there writing for Sportsnet.ca. We'll go through the lineups with you and some of the pitching matchups after the break here. We're also going to talk to Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus. He's a guy we bring in often to talk just baseball in general, but he's also a Phillies guy. So we'll go a little deeper on some of these Phillies who beat the brakes off the Blue Jays yesterday. And we're going to talk to Ryland of Origami Angel, one of my favorite bands, who also happen to be huge Phillies fans, and they're in town right now. So we'll talk to them after the break. We'll take you through the lineups as well as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays lose 10-1 yesterday to the Phillies, and they'll try to salvage a split this afternoon. 105, first pitch. It's Chris Bassett against Aaron Nola. You probably got to know that Phillies team a little too well yesterday, more so than you would like, but we're going to get to know them a little bit more anyway. We'll go through some lineups and things like that with you as well. We're going to see a slightly different Phillies lineup today as well. JT Realmuto is back in the two spot. Alek Boehm back in the four spot. So yeah, they'll have an even better lineup than the one that just hung 10 runs on the Blue Jays to help us learn a little bit more about this Phillies team. It's Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus. Man, 18 wins in their last 21, 11 straight in Philly. How you feeling, man? This is a very good Phillies team.
Yeah, it's really weird. We're used to them starting pretty terribly. So getting off to this good of a start, everyone's kind of like almost alarmed by it. I'm enjoying watching them right now.
How could you not be? 18 of 21 is a ridiculous heater to be on. And you know that a team is in the zone, and it kind of has these, you know, we joke like team of destiny vibes when teams get this hot or whatever. But something like yesterday where Trey Turner hits the IL, JT Realmuto gets a day off, Alek Boehm gets a day off, and okay, Cody Clemens will be the guy. He'll come up three times in big spots. I know you kind of joked about it on Twitter, but Cody Clemens just called up because of the Trey Turner thing, has only played a couple of games this year, absolutely swings the game for the Phillies a couple of times yesterday. I guess my question on this one is just, really?
Yeah, that's Cody's the secret weapon. You can only unleash him in small doses. League just can't handle him.
On a more serious side, you know, the standout yesterday, it sounds weird to say this because they scored 10 runs and Bryce Harper hit a grand slam and things, but the standout was once again Christopher Sanchez, who was awesome, generated 13 ground ball outs. The Jays got a couple guys in runners in scoring position early, but couldn't do anything with it in the early innings, and then he just kind of cruised from there. Double play, ground ball, ground ball. We started to see it last year. He got like two-thirds of a season in with a sub-4 ERA. He was pretty good, didn't walk anyone. And now we're seeing that ground ball rate has gone to an even higher level. Like, we're talking only Max Fried is above him on that ground ball mark. The sinker's really good. The changeup is really good. For him to have gone from a non-prospect that they got for Curtis Meade from the Rays back in 2019, wasn't really a big prospect-type guy through the minors. Has he pitched his way into, like, he's a guy we talk about as part of the Phillies core moving forward now?
I think so. It's pretty safe to say now. This year's kind of still like a was last year legit, you know, kind of season for him. But so far so good. His stuff last night looked better than it had in his last few starts. He had kind of lost feel for the changeup a little bit, and he's throwing harder this year than he did last year. And when he was throwing harder in the minors, that's when he was kind of a wild prospect. And that's one of the reasons the Rays traded him originally. That trade's kind of funny in hindsight, because for years it was referred to as like, how did the Rays get Curtis Meade from Chris Sanchez? And now it's like, well, don't know who came out ahead in that one. But yeah, I really enjoy watching him pitch. His changeup is special when it's on.
Yeah, it's really good. The way the sinker and the changeup tunnel off each other and have the similar kind of side-to-side movement, among the very top of the league in horizontal movement on both of those pitches. Pretty special combination. And the Jays were more than happy to just roll over a bunch of them yesterday. I mentioned when I brought you in here, we're going to see a different lineup today. The Phillies, you know, Alec Bohm had his hitting streak snapped. It's a day game after a night game. So they got Real Muto down. They got Bohm down. We're going to see both of those guys back in the lineup today. Alec Bohm is probably the guy that if you're not paying attention to the Phillies on a day-to-day basis as a Blue Jays fan, you're going to see those numbers flash on the screen today, and you're going to be like, what the heck happened? An OPS up near 1,000. You know, he has a WRC plus of 175. So, you know, we're talking 75% better than an average hitter right now. What has gone into Bohm's kind of breakout season? Obviously, he has the pedigree of being a number 3 overall pick, but it took him until now, age 27 season, to really put this all together.
Watching him day in, day out, the last few years, it's like all the tools were there, you know. They say a guy looks hitterish, and he definitely had that. Like, you get contact on anything, he hits the ball pretty hard. The big thing he talked about this year and he's doing so far is when you have the bat to ball ability to get the bat on anything, sometimes you swing at stuff you shouldn't. And this year he's really kind of reined that in, and he's focusing on swinging on pitches he can do damage on, and he is doing that like really at a high clip. I know for a few days there, him and Mookie were trading back and forth on who was leading the majors in average. Not sure who it is today, but hitting 360, you don't expect that to keep up, but take what we're getting from him right now.
Yeah, it's actually, it is Shohei Ohtani right now leading the league in average. Shocker. Okay. Ohtani, we're having this little battle here, and then it becomes a battle for second and third and fourth as it was. Actually, so Bohm is tied for third with Mookie. They're both at 349. And Trey Turner was right behind them at 343 before he hit the IL. So you know things are going well for the Dodgers and the Phillies. Shout out to Stephen Kwan, the only other guy that breaks up that Phillies Dodgers dominant top five. So I want to ask you, with respect to Bohm, I was looking through, so we've mentioned, you know, your Seager metric and your damage rate metric before, and I was looking through your leaderboards that are publicly available via your Twitter account. We could tweet that link out after. And you have a score in there that is contact above expected. So given the pitches that you swing at, what would we expect your contact rate to be, and what is it actually? And that kind of gives us an idea of bat-to-ball skill. And you look at the leaderboards there, and it's like, okay, Luis Arraez. That makes sense to me. He's a high bat speed guy. Just get the bat on it and line it into shallow right field. You see Blue Jays like Ernie Clement and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who are bat to ball, low damage, high contact guys. And then Alec Bohm and Salvador Perez are in there, and they're the only two guys who are also doing damage on that. How rare is that combination? How key is that to what Bohm's been able to do?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can both get your bat on a lot of stuff that your pitchers don't expect you to, and then you also put it into play with some authority, that's kind of like, that's the recipe right there for success. That's key for him. I mean, his ability to make contact with stuff has always been kind of crazy for his size. You know, he's like 6'5", really long arms, but he never really whiffed a lot. I know his strikeout rate, I haven't checked it recently, but it's like 15-16%. It's really, really low. I mean, just taking that bat to ball ability and then also focusing on staying closer to the heart of the zone with where he's swinging. I mean, that's a really great combination. It's kind of, and then, you know, if he takes a pitch or two, gets in trouble on a two-strike count, you can use that ability to make contact to like foul stuff off, stay alive, keep your at-bat going, and then shorten up and just put one into play. That's really the whole package.
Yeah, it is. It's been fun to watch. It'll be less fun to watch today if he does it against the Blue Jays from the cleanup spot against Chris Bassett. But we will we'll see how that goes. Not every single thing has gone well for the Phillies on the hitter side so far this year. It has mostly gone well, but today we'll see Nick Castellanos down into the six hole. He's hitting a little below the Mendoza line, only recently managed to get a couple extra base hits on the board. He had one yesterday and then immediately got picked off at second base, which feels really apt for his season so far. What have you seen in Castellanos's kind of step back this year? Always a streaky guy generally, but this has been kind of a prolonged slump here for him to start the year.
Yeah, he's very up and down. It's kind of you could see this coming a little bit because like every year his swing and strike rate goes up a little bit more. He doesn't make as much contact on stuff, and he chases a lot. And then you look at his contact rates outside of the zone, and they're just like steadily just going downhill. I was kind of worried about that. It's only kind of reinforced his concerns this year. I'm not sure what to expect from him the rest of the way, but. Hopefully he gets on some kind of roll, at least provides a little bit of thump to go with all the strikeouts, but I don't foresee him like rebounding to 2021 anytime soon.
Yeah, most stats are not linear and don't progress or regress in linear fashion. If you look at his whiff rate and his outside the zone contact rate, they are just pretty straightforward, man. It is not a one-to-one linear, but it's pretty damn close. So another guy who's been pretty up and down for the Phillies over the last couple of years and from afar has a fascinating relationship with the Phillies fan base is Aaron Nola. Off to a good start this year. There are some warning signs under the hood, maybe a little bit. What have you made of Nola's start? And I guess more to the way I led this question off, why is he like, why does it feel like he's at times a polarizing guy in Philadelphia despite, you know, spending his whole career there and having some very, very good years over the last decade?
Yeah, he's, on the whole, you could say he's had like a great career here, but the way he gets there is just a little frustrating sometimes. It's like, you know, he'll be cruising in a start for like five innings, and then he gives up a three-run shot in the sixth, in his last inning of work or something, never can end a game like on a roll. And if you look at like his career by season, he's kind of one of those like off and on year guys. You know, I think even years he's really good, odd years it looks a little rough. And then yeah, you were talking about under the hood. I know his velos looks like it's down this year a little bit, but he's also had some weird luck with like the weather when he started. Like he started a game when it was pouring rain in St. Louis and he said he couldn't land properly, and he was sitting like 89 in that start, and everyone was freaking out. But if you've ever tried to pitch on a mudslide of a mound, it's a little rough. But it on the whole, like in decent weather, he's been sitting like 92, 93, and that's not like great, but that's about where he needs to be. So hopefully he can keep it up this year. He's okay, I think. I think he's going to be all right the rest of the year.
And that knuckle curve is a pretty good weapon to have when your fastball's not there. It grades as a top five non-fastball pitch over baseball since 2015. So pretty good there, even if the whiff rate's down on it a tad. We'll probably see a lot of that today. If things are close and things go to the bullpen, we might see Jeff Hoffman and Orion Kerkering. And Jeff Hoffman is an interesting guy to check in on here in Toronto, because he was a part of the Troy Tulowitzki trade, was a failed prospect, bounced all around baseball, but the last 2 years has turned into like a really good bullpen arm for the Phillies. You add in Kerkering, who, you know, we don't have a ton of sample yet, but the stuff just pops off the page. More on the Hoffman side, but what has gone into this Phillies bullpen, even with Sir Anthony Dominguez not being as good as maybe they'd hoped? This is a really, really solid bullpen getting the ball to Jose Alvarado.
Yeah, every time Hoffman comes in, I almost feel more confident in him than Alvarado to some extent. Like, I just, because I don't think he's going to lose the zone and walk a bunch of guys necessarily, but it's kind of unbelievable. He was like a minor league free agent just over a year ago, because we watch him go in there and like the slider is insane. He's like deaf to righties, and he's pretty good against lefties too. I think he's a free agent at the end of the year, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, he's money. And then you mentioned Kerkering. The jury's still out on him. Like the sweeper, if he comes in, you know, fans can see it. It's like 87 miles an hour and breaks like 18 inches or something. It's kind of unicorn movement. But he has a tendency to throw it a lot. Happened in the NLCS last year where like he was just spamming that pitch, and Diamondbacks hitters were like, okay, this is gonna break out of the zone, and they just didn't go after it. So they're trying to get him to throw his fastball a little bit more this year, so that's something I've been keeping an eye on. He's still throwing the sweeper like 60% of the time, so like I said, jury's still out on that one.
This is a good thing for the Jays to be aware of if he comes into this one. But again, the Jays would have to be in a close game for the bullpen usage and deployment to really matter. Quickly, before I let you go here, Robert, you retweeted an interview that Phillies pitching coach Caleb Cotham did the other day, really open about some of these advanced concepts that the team is looking at from the pitching side. First of all, very, very cool for him to do a public appearance and talk that openly about what they're doing strategy-wise and the way they're kind of blending analytics into what they're doing. What did you learn from listening to that interview with Caleb Cotham?
A lot. For one, like it sounded like he could like talk about this stuff at like a bar in Nashville, Tennessee or something. Like I think that's a pretty big deal when it comes to communicating what he wants to these pitchers and getting them to understand it. Because guys like Nola and Wheeler are not exactly like, you know, numbers heavy nerds or anything like that. And then also he was talking about like the pitch usage, he's trying to make sinkers cool again. You notice that with the staff. They throw a lot of sinkers to same-handed batters as the pitchers. They lead baseball in that. That's something Nola's done this year that's been pretty effective, too. He's throwing a sinker a little bit more to right. So maybe you could look for that today. They have their pitchers try to pitch to contact a little bit, like the old St. Louis Cardinals way, but they can get whiffs when they need to. But that's why you see, like, Ranger, Wheeler, Sanchez, Nola going 6-7 innings a lot of times out, because you know they're trying to get those quick outs too. So it was interesting to hear him go about talk about how they try to get that done.
Yeah, it was a fast. I didn't catch the entire thing, but I grabbed like 15 minutes of it this morning. Really, really fascinating stuff. So thank you for passing that on, and glad you guys as a fan base. I know you're an analyst as well, but it's always helpful to hear that stuff and learn a little bit more. Always helpful to have you on and learn a little bit more, Robert. Thanks so much. Enjoy this afternoon game. Hopefully, it goes differently than yesterday's.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. Nola and Bassett's an interesting matchup, but thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Robert Orr of Baseball Prospectus at Not the Bobby Orr on Twitter. It is Bassett against Nola. Bassett, you know, continues to struggle with lefties this year. We saw the Phillies lefties jump all over Jose Berríos yesterday. They've got four of them in the lineup again today. On the other side, the Jays only have two lefties in their lineup, Varsho and Kiermaier. So you're not seeing Biggio in there. You're not seeing Vogelback in there, despite Nola being a bit of a splits guy. He's kind of been an interesting guy in terms of righty versus lefty dynamic over the years, because at one point he was a reverse splits guy and then pretty split neutral. And then now he's just a standard guy who does a little better against righties than lefties, as you'd expect over a long sample. Nola is working with a bit of a fastball decline, 1.6 miles an hour down on that fastball velocity. We'll see if the Jays can get to him. Springer leading off again. The big note in the lineup today is Bo Bichette's been dropped to sixth in the order. David Schneider will hit seventh. Danny Jansen up to fifth. So a little bit of juggling there. I don't know. David Schneider being seventh still feels low, but unless you're going to move Springer out of that leadoff spot, I don't know who goes down even further when they've already dropped Bo. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out. We're going to see Origami Angel in Toronto tomorrow. They're playing at the Opera House Thursday, May 8th with Microwave. Tickets are still available. They have a great new song out called Fruit Wine. Ryland of Origami Angel joins us now. He's a big Phillies guy. Ryland, what's up, man? Thank you for doing this. How are you?
Yo, how are y'all? Doing great. Doing great. Stoked to be out here. Stoked to be talking about some ball.
Yeah. So what is, you guys are on tour right now and you've got an off day between Buffalo and Toronto dates. What does that look like for you?
Honestly, right now, so we're chilling. We got a hotel showering and stuff like that. Just hanging for the day. I don't even know. We're going to try to get in some stuff. We're crossing into Canada tonight. Like, we're going to probably cross in around midnight. And then tomorrow, we're just going to have a whole day of fun in Toronto and then play a show. But really, really stoked to be coming back into Toronto. We haven't played Toronto in about a little over a year and a half, and we love the city, so we're really stoked to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you guys here. Looking forward to the show again. It's the Opera House tomorrow, and you guys are playing with Microwave, so it should be a great show. You guys are big sports fans. Like, a lot of, I know it's more on the basketball side. You did the Indie Basketball podcast recently, which I love. You guys have the kind of 76ers-inspired merch at times, but you're also a big baseball guy. How are you feeling right now, Phillies-wise? The Phillies are the hottest team in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited. I mean, just as a Phillies fan, who's pretty, you know, I follow from baseball is kind of like, it starts as a comfort sport to me when the Sixers get bad and stuff like that. So it's always like, I start tapping in April, and, you know, for the last couple of years that we've been good, our Aprils are always kind of a struggle. Usually it's like, if we get out looking at 500, I'm like, hey, we got a chance. But I looked at this team that was 8-8, and now we're like 26-11, and it feels like a dream, and it's great. A lot of it was happening before Bryce is really tagging the ball, so that's great. They're winning games with Trey out. I'm really excited just because, like, I've always been a huge baseball fan. I played baseball. Baseball is, like, my main sport that I played growing up. And it's great to just see the resurgence of baseball in Philadelphia. The postseason atmosphere is always great. So just anytime you get a chance to be in the race, it's beautiful. And I'm really excited. I think some guys have really stepped up. Ranger Suarez has been so good this year, and I've always been a Ranger believer, and it's just great to see him put it together and have a really great start to the season. Obviously, Wheeler is a freaking ace, so yeah, I'm really stoked on the team this year.
Yeah, they are a lot of fun, and even the one guy who isn't off to the greatest start, Nick Castellanos, at least it's always funny with him. It's always amusing. This is a team for a couple years now that they've been, like, not to oversimplify, they obviously have very, very good and very talented players, but they're also, like, one of the most vibes-oriented teams in the league. They always seem to be having a good time. The post-game stuff during the playoff runs, when we see into the clubhouse, is always looks like a real blast, and that's, I'm not saying that's the only thing, but they did just go to the World Series and then to the NLCS a year after. Why do you think this team, personality-wise, kind of fits the city of Philadelphia and fits you guys as fans?
I don't know, man. I think so. I think it all starts with, you know, the roster construction. I think there's a lot of guys who are willing to just go out and show up. And Philly's a hard place to play for a lot of athletes. You get a lot of scrutiny for not – being as great. You look at a guy like Castellanos, but I think a lot of it comes from mentality, and I think there's sort of like a brotherhood in the clubhouse that it's like, okay, like, we believe in these guys that are around this team. Even when you're struggling, we'll have faith in you, and those guys know, okay, this city might be really, really harsh on me. They might boo Castellanos when he comes up the bat when he's hitting 175, but the reason they're doing that is because everybody wants the same goal. And I think that just starts top down, you know, just a good communication between front office, the ownership, and all the way down to like the managerial level. And I think everybody's kind of on the same page, and you don't really get that a lot in baseball. I feel like, you know, you got to have 26 guys and then a whole farm system of coaches and players and whatever, just being on the same page. So when you see it and the stars kind of align and you build that culture through veterans and then kind of, you know, give it down to the younger people who are coming up, I think it's a really beautiful thing. And we haven't really seen it since the decline of, like, our last great era from like 2007 to 2011. So seeing that again, it is really cool. And yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of the stars are down to do whatever, you know. We'll see you guys who are, okay, I can't really play the outfield anymore, like a Bryce Harper, and he'll tap in and just, you know, make that move in mid career, go to first base. It's just like kind of a hard nosed attitude, and just anybody's really willing to do whatever to help this team get back to where they want to be. So I think that just fits the city as a whole.
Back where they want to be. You mentioned that 2007 to 2010 era. That included a World Series. Now, you know, looking to get back there. I mentioned World Series appearance 2 years ago, NLCS last year. What was it like for you guys being on the road? I don't know if you were on the road or if you were in the studio at all during those runs. But if you were, how do you keep up? Like, obviously, right now, you can miss a regular season game. Like, if the Phillies play tomorrow and you've got a show at the Opera House, you can miss it. It's not the end of the world. Check the box score after. But I'd imagine come playoff time, come World Series time, it's a little tougher and a little more intense.
It's tough, man. And honestly, so in 2022, when we made the World Series run, we were on the road. We were on tour. And it was one of the harder things. I mean, I have YouTube TV, so I'll always tap in on my phone whenever I can. And I was watching stuff during sound check. It's the same with the Sixers too, whenever in the playoffs, because we always tour in the spring too. So I'll always like have a way to watch the games. But it was honestly, I hate to say it, because we were playing fun shows and having a great time, we were doing what we do, but it was a kind of a big regret for me that I didn't get to see as much Phillies World Series action or postseason action in 2022. I didn't really get to go to any games. I was watching as much as I could, and like I remember walking to go get something to eat before we were playing St. Louis, and then Harper hit the two-run home run against the Padres that ended up you know, I was tearing up on the way to go like to Burger King or something. So but I kind of regretted not being able to be a little bit more in the environment. Come last year, on the NLCS run, we were recording. I was recording some stuff in Philadelphia or outside of Philadelphia with Will Yip at Studio 4, and he is a degenerate Philly fan. And there were several days where we were like, all right, we got enough stuff done by like 1 o'clock, and we're like, maybe we should go head over to Citizens Bank Park, man. Maybe we should catch them. And we got to see Game 3 and Game 4 of the NLDS. Got to see them take out the Braves, which is a really great experience. It was electric energy. And being back in that postseason environment, getting to see that, it made up for everything. Even though we didn't get back to the World Series and we ended up not winning it all, just being there was such an electric feeling. And I'm glad that we got to see something in 2023.
Will Yip, who also produced your terrific new song, Fruit Wine. I got to tell you, by the way, before I let you go, I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago, friends of mine, and their recessional was Skeleton Key. So that's how big you guys are in Toronto, where you guys will play the newlywed couple back down the aisle. So appreciate you guys here in Toronto. Appreciate you taking a few minutes out talking about the Phillies with us. And yeah, looking forward to tomorrow at the Opera House, man. Thank you for doing this.
Of course. Thank you. And I'll see you then.
All right. Ryland of Origami Angel. Again, the new song's called Fruit Wine. Really great song. One of my favorite bands. They're at the Opera House tomorrow night, and the Jays happen to have an off day. So maybe you could go check that out. Also wanted to ask a little, we're running out of time here and we've got a little bit of news in a second. But yeah, the fact that, you know, Philadelphia and Toronto have some rivalries over the years. The Raptors obviously beat them on the way to the NBA championship. The Jays obviously beat them for the 1993 World Series. But they have taken some of our most legendary players like Roy Halladay and Kyle Lowry. So an interesting one there. So the news that I mentioned, there are a handful of small injury updates, but the big one per Hazel May is that the Jays held a team meeting this morning. The subject matter will be kept behind closed doors, according to Blue Jays manager John Schneider, but Hazel passing along that, yeah, there was a team meeting. They're trying to talk this out. They've lost 10 of the last 13. There was also a small note from Arden Zwelling that Yimi Garcia was not available yesterday. They're hoping to have him available today if he checks out pregame. He hasn't appeared in a game since April 28th. So at this point, they probably should have put him on the IL, but given how well he was pitching, given how weak the bullpen's been, you understand it. Bowden Francis threw a bullpen on Monday in Toronto. Felt good. He's got a two-inning side session coming up next. He's going to start on his rehab assignment, but the idea is to get him back in a multi-inning bullpen role as well. Yariel Rodriguez rejoining the team today after pitching in Florida the last little while. Chad Green is only long tossing. Ricky Tiedemann, it's going to be a couple weeks before he gets back to the mound. He's just throwing off of flat ground. Joey Votto making okay progress in hitting, fielding, throwing down at the complex. But no live at-bats yet, no game action until he's 100% healthy. Aaron Sanchez, who we talked about yesterday, is going to start for Buffalo on Friday, and Aurelvis Martinez homered again yesterday, also took a walk. I think that's it for the updates for today. So again, it's Chris Bassett against a lefty-heavy Phillies lineup. They're going to have four lefties in there. The Jays will counter against Aaron Nola with only two lefties. George Springer still in the leadoff spot. It'll go Varsho, Vlad, Justin Turner, Danny Jansen, Bo Bichette in the sixth hole, David Schneider, seven, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, eighth, and Kevin Kiermaier rounding it out in center field, hitting ninth. There's no Blair and Barker coming up for you right now. We'll kick it to the Jeff Merrick Show, but Blair and Barker will be back with you for Jays Talk post-game, and of course, all our regular Jays coverage. Dan, Joe, and Hazel on the Sportsnet television broadcast. Jamie and Shai coming up on Blue Jay Central with you at 12:30. Ben Schulman and Chris LaRue on the radio call, and Arden's down there to write off of it for Sportsnet.ca. 105 first pitch, Bassett against Nola. Thank you to Caitlin McGrath, to Robert Orr, to Ryland of Origami Angel, and to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. We will be back to talk to you at 11 o'clock tomorrow, hopefully after a win. Hopefully, if not, we find out a little bit about what this team meeting was. Jays need it. See you tomorrow.